The Space God Memoirs. Episode 28. The exaltation of flight coursed through my being as I found myself once more in the sky, face to face with masses of fluffy clouds, swirling and churning with wetness, just like I'd always imagined them from the ground. There was another glimmer up ahead, like before, a yellowish-white glow from just above the clouds. I flew upward more, feeling the coolness of a cloud I passed through, and one more after that. I found myself looking out over the clouds clustered below me, like the rolling hills of the sky, lit by pink and yellow lights from above. There I saw it, my goal. The Golden Palace sat upon a ridge of clouds, shining in the light of an unseen sun, its many spired walls set with fluted towers and inlaid with elaborate filigree, depicting symbols from various religious sects on Aruvis. I floated towards this full-on ludicrous sight, and soon I could see through the grand archway leading inside. I could smell the aroma of flowered perfume and hear the gurgle of fountains from within. As I drew closer, that gurgle was joined by the melody of laughter, tantalizing feminine laughter. Going through that archway, I stepped into a garden ringed with fruit trees, awash in the scent of flowers that grew all about. Its middle was dominated by four pools of clear water, and within the pools were dozens of naked women. All manner of women, all of them different, all of them beautiful in their own ways, but all of them beautiful. Bodies slender and pale, dark and curvy, plump and delectable or toned by athleticism. Hair in shades of brown and yellow, black, blue, and green. Faces innocent, on the cusp of girl and woman, or mature and lustrous, filled with fire and passion. There were even a few men among their number, frolicking in the water beside the ladies, tone and athletic in form. They all lingered about the pools, laughing and sighing, touching one another, or else looking up at me and beckoning me forward. Beyond them was another archway, but it was hard to concentrate on that. I could feel all the unfulfilled sexual desires of my life bubbling up. Kef was not a virgin, but hadn't gotten laid a whole lot either. There was hardly time for that in the life of a scrapper, after all. At least not for anything like this. Which probably didn't exist down there outside of the most lavish king's harem. I had an urge to jump into those pools, to just let go and give in to my desires. To leap in and do a whole lot of scragging. I could hear them calling to me as I took another step into the garden room, smelling the heady aroma of flowers, feeling the moist air on my skin. I was interrupted by a tug at my consciousness, Rayleigh, giving me a bit of an inner slap in the face. I paused, and that was enough. It was as if I stepped outside of myself. I could see this whole thing for what it was, utterly false. Yeah, I was horny. Yeah, it would be damn nice to fulfill all the fantasies of my youth. To scrag a whole lot of chicks with absolutely zero consequences. Except that this place was just as much of a trap as the rest of this afterlife or dreamland or whatever this all was. For all I knew, those chicks were some kind of demons that would suck my soul out, among other things, and leave me in a permanent stupor, stuck in this beautiful but ultimately fake place. Nah, forget that. I floated on past, down the middle of the gardens, between the four pools. I could feel some of the girls reaching out to me with their soft, wet hands as I passed. It was nice and enticing, but they all slipped off. I stepped through the archway and into the main palace. Moments later, I entered a high-ceiling chamber, the walls and lining pillars gilded just like the palace's exterior. Within this chamber, the walls echoed with the sounds of one huge orgy of sex, moaning, panting, gasps of ecstasy. There must have been at least 100 people here, some practically piled on one another, all sweating and grunting as they thrust, pushed, and licked. Men with women, women with women, men with men, all races and genders, and some I didn't even recognize. Just like before, I steeled myself, intent on ignoring all this and moving on. My eyes were caught for a brief instant by someone I vaguely recognized, a square-jawed man, sandwiched between a woman and another man, his face lost in ecstasy. It was Sir Jettis. With Rayleigh still in the back of my head, nudging me onward, I was able to focus away from the orgy enough to see another exit, an adjoining hall leading onward. As I walked past, I realized something. Jettis had made it to the top of the tower. As far as I knew, he had sat in the chair, same as me. And here he was, lost in his own afterlife fantasy. I wondered if the same thing would happen to me if I wasn't careful. With that thought, I squinted my eyes and strode across the chamber towards another huge golden archway on the other end. But that wasn't the last of this place. Beyond the orgy hall, I could see the golden palace expanding into chamber after luxurious chamber. I peeked into rooms filled with banquets, all manner of food laid out across enormous tables where hundreds sat and ate. I could smell the barbecued Duga steak, the roasted Gendra berries, alfo pudding, all the best foods I could think of. But again, I moved on. My will already steeled against sex. What more could food offer? Other rooms were libraries, filled with all manner of collected tomes, filling shelves that rose up to 30-foot ceilings. Another sort of temptation, I supposed, for the knowledge addicted. I beheld chambers of glittering golden treasures, museums of marvelous art, and sundry other distractions. I surmised that that was what this golden palace was, a hall of distractions. At the very end, the long hallway opened up into a balcony, where white-yellow light poured in from outside. I stepped onto that balcony, whose golden rails stood between me and the open blue sky, where clouds drifted in warm winds. It was split by a translucent crystalline staircase that spiraled upward until it vanished into a distant, puffy cloud. I followed it, my lighter-than-physical body practically gliding up the lengthy stairs, rising upward along the skyscape and through the cool, wet expanse of a cloud. I emerged on the inside of a great dome. Here, light beamed in upon polished alabaster floors covered in silver trim. The room, circular in shape, was ringed by symmetrically placed pillars, each in the form of serene, multi-faced women whose upraised arms supported the lofty ceiling. The room shone with whiteness. Even the people within it, some 20 or 30, wore the purest of white robes. All of them had their backs to me and were stooped in deep bows. All except one, a man resplendent with even more light than the beams coming from the ceiling, clad in silvery armor with matching robes and an eight-pointed headpiece that rose up out of his snowy white hair. "Ophiro?" I asked, wondering if that was really him on that throne, decked out like a deity. From within, Bakibra stirred. Noticing me at last, Ophiro smiled and turned my way. As he did so, the light around him intensified and spilled out over the gathered worshippers, who began quietly chanting his praises.
Another supplicant come to honor me.
Welcome, he intoned, his voice reverberating across the dome.
My prince, stop this,
I said, though it wasn't my voice that said it, or my mind. Bakibra stepped forward.
This is not you, Ophiro.
The godlike being turned to us fully now, analyzing me with his pale gray eyes, cool bemusement within their depths. His robes fluttered as he moved, his body floating across the tiled floor until he was face to face with me.
It is me,
he said, his voice echoing in a chorus across the chamber.
I am translated. I am exalted, enhanced. I have become all that I was destined to become.
Ophiro drew within a meter of me, and he was indeed a magnificent sight to behold. The prince wasn't really my type. I generally didn't go for cold, heartless maniacs. As Kef, I might not have been that into Ophiro. But that part of me that was now Bakibra certainly was,
only accentuated by the fact that he was now resplendent in the garb of a god, in a holy temple, surrounded by worshippers. The calf part of me was doing all he could not to throw himself on the ground and join them in their adoration. The god Ophiro glanced down at me and raised one thin eyebrow.
Bakibra? Is that you?
He asked.
What are you doing here, my protector?
Bakibra stepped forward, straight out of me. I saw her, full in the flesh and armor now. She walked towards her prince-turned-deity.
Like I said, Your Grace, this is not you. This place is doing it to you, filling your head with illusions. Your mind, out of all, should be best at resisting this fantasy.
This is no fantasy, Guardian, said Ophiro. The trials are finished. I have conquered them and claimed my place here in the realm of the gods. To walk among them.
I don't think so, said Bakibra. I feel that, in a way, we have all left Aruvis, but this place is no realm of the gods.
Who are you to say so, Bakibra?
Said Ophiro, throwing back his perfectly sculpted hair.
You failed your trials, Guardian. You died back there in the tower.
I did what I had to do.
I faced down the temptations of the spirit world. And here I am.
Yeah, I interceded, stepping forward.
I don't think so, Prince Shiny.
Ophiro glared down at me. I could feel an unseen pressure upon my chest.
The guide? What are you even doing here?
I figured the knights outside the tower had taken care of your lot.
You thought wrong, buddy, I said. I got up there, sat in that throne, same as you.
That Bakibra here just so happened to die so you could activate.
Yep, sat in that thing, got whisked away to this supposed overworld, same as you.
And, you know, I saw the others on my way up here, too. And they were all pretty much caught up in their own little stupidity. For some, it was guilt and torture and fighting. For others, it was sex or food or other nice stuff. For you, it seems to be this, basking in your pretend glory.
Ophiro said nothing in response, just shook his head.
Then he thrust forward one pale hand. Next thing I know, I was thrown halfway across the room, my back pinned to a standing pillar by an invisible force. I tried struggling, but all I could muster was some impotent flailing of arms.
Leave him be, said Bakibra, her voice amplified.
Ophiro immediately turned his head to his former protector.
He speaks the truth. No matter his crude words. We are, all of us, in a land of illusions and deceptions. This place shows us what we want to see, or expect to see. Whatever trials the gods place before us, this is not yet their conclusion.
Come now, Bakibra,
voiced Ophiro.
Glance upon me in this raiment. See these heavens before me. These adoring supplicants.
He made a wave of his hand and particles of light glittered from it.
I know you must have suffered greatly upon that altar. I thank you for that. Your death below served as a key to open the gateway I passed through. A noble death, a dutiful death. For that you will have a place of honor here in paradise. You will sit by my side for eternity.
Still pinned against the pillar as I was, I could see Bakibra clearly, and I could tell she was faltering. I could feel her debating inside of herself, questioning what was real in this dream world. Was this deluded creature really Ophiro? Was this the man she had fallen in love with, had pined over for a decade of frustration and rage?
I loved you,
Bakibra said at last, a tear streaming from her left eye. All those years I spent in service, taking on the burden of the armor for you. I did it all, killing in your name, questing to the ends of the world. Not out of duty to my king, but for you.
I even died for you, Ophiro.
Always protector,
said the prince.
I was aware of your affections, and in my own way, I felt as you did.
I cared for you greatly, Bakibra.
Yet you must have known that it could never have been as you imagined it.
That our love was between equals.
I knew,
Bakibra answered, her head bowed.
I knew well that you would never take me as wife or as consort.
Had we remained in the world, I would not have lived more than a few cycles, thanks to the armor. So I did what I could to serve you while I still remained.
Indeed you did, said Ophiro, a limp smile on his lips.
But Kef is right, Bakibra stated, wiping away her tear. You are no better than the others. You were willing to just let me do it, to die on that altar without a goodbye, without even trying to stop me, all for your destiny.
Ophiro moved slightly back, his benevolent smile melting into a frown, his brow furrowed.
The pressure on me jumped. My body pushed so hard against the pillar that I could nearly explode.
You died so I could ascend, as was your duty and your desire, said the prince.
If that is how you feel, said Bakibra, softly, then perhaps my love was misplaced.
Ophiro let out a shrill hiss. The dome shook with rage. The pillar I was pressed up against shattered. Dust and shrapnel erupting into the air as my body was thrown to the ground. I was surprised to find myself alive and unhurt. Then again, maybe I wasn't so surprised. Could there even be real death or pain in this dream world, this illusion? I stood to my feet, feeling Ophiro's psychic grip gone. I began strolling towards him.
Give it up, Prince, I said.
He glared at me, just like he had before. I felt no pressure on me this time, nor did I fly back. I continued walking.
That just proves it, I went on. You have no real power here.
All that was just illusion, belief, Rushas shit. I thought that you could throw me across the room, so you did. But now I'm realizing that you could do all of nothing to me, because once again, you did not ascend. The trials are not over, and you are not a god.
I got right up to Ophiro, until we were face to face. I sort of considered punching him then, but chose not to. Instead, I poked him, right in the arm, playfully.
There you go, I said.
He looked at me and started to quiver with rage. Off to the side, his supposed worshippers began to fall, one by one, clutching their throats as they appeared to die.
Come on, I said. Come with me. This isn't over.
I reached out my hand, and simultaneously, so did Bakibra.
Please, Prince, she said.
No! Muttered Ophiro, his already pale face looking even more ashen.
He descended to the ground and backed away. The dome quaked further as the prince looked away from us, shame in his eyes while he continued to backpedal, shaking his head and repeatedly muttering,
No! No! No!
Then he began to fade. Within seconds he was gone, vanished as though he had never been.
Bakibra beside me gave a final glance, sad but accepting, before stepping forward and dissolving into me.
Likewise went the rest of that domed chamber, the walls and floors vanishing in showers of light, along with the illusory worshippers and everything else in there, until I was once more alone, floating in the open air, only clouds and sky around me. I wondered if any of that had been real. Had that even been Ophiro, also here in this bizarre place, or some delusion of my own mind? Like everything else here, I concluded, that probably didn't matter. It was done with. So I flew into that wild expanse of sky, up above the highest clouds. The winds rushed by as all hint of land disappeared from my sight. I was alone, floating between air and air. There was a slight terror to it, a feeling of having nothing to hold on to, no anchor point against the infinite sky on all sides, accompanied by the idea that at any moment I could get sucked into that infinity and vanish forever. I hung in that state for a brief instant only. Then more heavens appeared before me, dozens of sky fortresses like before, but greater still. Many shone in colors of silver and gold, but also ruby and emerald and glittering sapphire. There were grand, regal castles, serene monasteries, temples with crystalline towers, lovely palmed oases. But that was the least of them. I flew by realms that appeared as enormous flowers of light, gradually shifting colors as they grew, bloomed, opened, and then receded back onto themselves in a constant cycle.
there was an entire city built into the floating silver head of a statue, whose eyes would blink as I flew by, revealing radiant blue orbs beneath. They all appeared idyllic and perfect. Sublime realms where people either indulged themselves in perpetual pleasure like before, or basked in the glory of some worship or another. In some, the people would gather around what I guessed were gods. Titanic humanoid figures the size of 10 men. Multi-armed beings with metallic skin. Fiery dragons, and even figures of pure glowing light. I thought I recognized a few of them from the occasional religious sermon I had overheard. Were these the gods of Aruvis? The creators? Were they real, or just some illusion generated by this strange place? As I flew by, I'm pretty sure I saw gods and heavens belonging to at least 4 separate religions, all who had claimed the others were false. Yet they were all here. I shrugged and flew by. None of them were my gods, after all. And nobody seemed to notice me at all as I zipped on through the skies, ignoring their little belief systems. At last, I saw no more ahead of me, only open blue sky. As I traveled forward still, the blue grew gradually darker and darker, azure and then navy blue, until it was near black. Then the stars appeared, shimmering in the space beyond. Between where I was and where the endless vastness of space waited was a sort of barrier, a matrix of translucent geometric figures, so many lines and angles that seemed to spread all around me. The closer I got, the more defined it became, until it looked almost solid, a kind of crystalline shield between me and the great beyond. There, on the very edge of it, was a gap, ringed by a circle of blue and gray metal. On the other side were the stars, unobstructed and open. I flew in. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Space God Memoirs. Space God is written, performed, and produced by A.M. Arctos. Original musical score by Alpha Colors. Various sound effects created by Industrial Strength Records Incorporated. Please support this podcast by following, rating, and sharing on your favorite social media site. For further info on Space God, its creator, and various other opinions, musings, and thoughts, go to www.spacegodmemoirs.com or follow me on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. If you enjoyed the Space God Memoirs, please consider supporting us by becoming a patron. Check out the Patreon link in our description to learn more.